where I was born.
Welcome to Hometown, a podcast by Episcopal Migration Ministries, the Refugee Resettlement and Welcome Ministry of the Episcopal Church. I'm Kendall Martin.
And I'm Janet Morford. Join us as we seek to build a community of welcome by sharing interviews, stories, and resources to help you advocate for our newest neighbors amidst mass displacement and forced migration. Thank you for being with us.
Today's hometown guest is Nasratullah Khalil. Khalil, as he prefers to be called, lives in Syracuse, New York, where he works for Interfaith Works of Central New York, one of Episcopal Migration Ministries affiliates. Khalil was born in 1980 and grew up in a beautiful area of Afghanistan, close to Kabul, surrounded by family and friends during a time he calls his golden years. But by the time he was in high school, the tranquility of the life he and his loved ones knew had been interrupted by the Afghan civil war. Khalil's family and teachers encouraged him to persevere in the face of daily bombings and threats. He finished high school and college and began working as an accountant. He married and after a few years was hired by a company that subcontracted with the U.S. military in its fight against the Taliban. Because of this work, he was eligible to apply for a special immigrant visa to come to the U.S. He saw this as the only chance for his children to grow up in safety. However, before Khalil's SIV status had been granted, the U.S. withdrew from Afghanistan in August 2021. Very quickly, the Taliban took over, and the family's future suddenly became quite bleak. Khalil shared with us the ordeal that he and his family, including four young children, faced as they hid within Afghanistan, used all of their savings to travel to a third country, and waited as he tried to obtain the SIV status that would open doors to safety for all of them. Join us as we hear about the long path that Khalil and his family took, away from the home they knew and loved and into an uncertain future. There is so much to be learned from their story.
Thank you so much for joining us today, Khalil. As you know, the name of this podcast is Hometown, and it was born out of a conversation around what home means or what home represents, especially for people who have been forced from their home and find themselves making a home in a new land. So I'd love to begin our conversation today by asking you about your early years growing up in Afghanistan. Can you tell our listeners about the amazing place where you grew up?
Yeah, thank you very much for your question. I was born in Kabul, Afghanistan. Kabul is the capital city of Afghanistan. And I was born in Kabul, in Baghbala, in the 1980s.
And can you tell us a little bit about Baghbala?
Yeah, Baghbala is Delhi, Neh. But in English, you can call it a high garden. It's located in the hillside, in the upper side, and it has a lot of trees, and there is Intercontinental Hotel, the famous hotel of Afghanistan, also located in this park. It has a beautiful view. You can see most of the Kabul area from this park, because it's located in the hillside.
Mm-hmm.
So mostly the people, the families and also individuals, they are coming there for the birthday, especially in the weekend, which is Friday. In Afghanistan, the weekend is Friday. Friday is the last day of the week. So all the holiday, people are coming for a picnic. Also, people are coming there for exercises, especially in the elderly party. So,
yeah. It really sounds lovely from your description. I just think of all the almond trees and fruit trees, and it sounds like a beautiful place. What besides the fact that you lived in this beautiful place on the outskirts of Kabul, what else do you think is important to know about your early years?
Actually, I was grew up in the Baghbala, and I studied Sumi language, elementary, middle, and high school, like I played at all. And Baghbala is famous place in Kabul. my parents were there and we were all living together there.
And when you think of home during those early years in Agbala, what smells or tastes or sounds or habits do you associate with home in that place?
Yes. Up here, well, when I was coming from the school, around 12:30, the school is usually from 8 a.m. till 12 and 12:30. Yeah. And, so when I reached home around 1 o'clock, it was very close to my home. I mean, the school was very close to my home. And then we were sitting together in our yard. We had a big yard in our house. My grandmother, my mother, my aunt, they were all gathering together for the lunch. I was eating lunch together with them. And then after that, I was playing with my siblings and my cousins, my neighbors. The famous game was kite. We were playing kite. Now we were doing our homework together in a specific room, which was dedicated for our homework. So we had the best time of our life and the first decade of my life. I mean, in 1980s. Mm-hmm. I was in the elementary and middle school. So it was my golden time.
Yes, sounds really lovely. I'm also curious about your education experience growing up. I mean, during the years of ongoing civil war and rocket attacks, I mean, what conditions were your school in during those years?
Yes, as I mentioned before, during my time in elementary and middle school, everything was normal. Basically the situation was good. We didn't have any issue with that. So, but after the middle school, when I went to the high school, the civil war started. So it was really difficult for us, not for only for me, for everyone. Like me. I remember that high school was 10 minutes by walk. Distance from my house, but still it was very challenging. It was difficult time for us. Mentally, we were not ready for the lectures, for the schools, for the classes, but physically we were there. Mm-hmm. Because every day we were witness for the rockets, for the bombing. Even one day we were ahead and it class, two rockets hit our neighborhood. So everyone is good. A lot of the students were injured because of the rockets, because of the window was broken. So everyone is good. It was really a difficult time for us.
Yes, it had to be incredibly stressful and distressing for everyone. And during that time, what did you learn from those around you and how to, I guess, really adapt and make your way through what was really intense and stressful for everyone around you?
Yes. But even if I mean, these are these problems, these tensions, difficulties, my parents and my teacher encouraged me to complete my education, and anytime they were asking me, never give up. This is the time that I complete my education. So in order to have a better future, in order to continue their education, you have to go to the class. There was no way.
If that was the path forward, was education.
Yeah.
Khalil, you also mentioned that by the time that things had gotten so bad that you were looking to leave Afghanistan. You had 4 young children. Would you mind telling us a little bit more about the growth of your family?
After the completion of the high school and then university and then my master's degree, and recent years, I was working with a chef with a U.S. pharmacy contractor company as a finance assistant manager. So I had SIB case and I was eligible for the SIB case. So I applied for the SIB case and I almost completed all the process, and I was waiting for the visa interview called embassy. Unfortunately, the principal government of Afghanistan collapsed, fell. So the U.S. embassy in Afghanistan is not its works and activities in Afghanistan. I had no choice. Then I was at home with my 4 children. We didn't go outside, just except for some groceries and some other occasions. We were staying at home. We were just changing our home from one place to another place to relatives, friends. Because of that time, when the previous government of Afghanistan collapsed and the Taliban came and captured Afghanistan, there was a gap. There was a gap between this period. So it was difficult time too for everyone.
Right. I just want to make sure we understand this whole sort of transition, because it sounds very, very difficult. I think it's also very important to your story. So after you finished high school, you did go to the university in Afghanistan?
Yes. After the high school, I went to Kabul University for the pre-exam. Mm-hmm. Economics faculty, and they started work with the government at the Kabul International Airport. And after a few years, I quit the job with the government. Then I started work with the private companies.
Okay, but you said that those private companies that you worked with, one was a subcontractor with the U.S. Army?
Yes, exactly. It was a subcontractor with the U.S. Army.
And so that is what made you eligible to apply for a special immigrant visa?
Yes, exactly.
You had applied for that visa and you were waiting for it when the Americans pulled out and the government of Afghanistan fell. And it was after the government fell that you and your family had to start moving around the country from place to place?
Yes, because as I mentioned before, there was a gap. The previous government of Afghanistan, they escaped from Afghanistan. Uh-huh. There was some security issues. No one was in the over at that time.
Right.
Yeah, even some criminal escaped from the jail. Then what would happen in that case?
Yeah. How long did that sort of gap without a clear government in place last?
Almost, let's say, it was less than a hat.
So then within that time frame, can you walk us through what the steps in the process were for you applying to get special immigrant visa status?
As I mentioned before, I was waiting for the visa interview.
Okay.
I already filed the application, the DS 260, I can't remember the name of that form, which is the application for the visa. And quite already submitted everything, and I was waiting to schedule my visa interview at COVID embassy. But due to the situation of Afghanistan, so the embassy stopped their activities, their works in Afghanistan. Before the government of Afghanistan, the previous government of Afghanistan failed, American forces started to evacuate their account colleagues.
Mm-hmm.
And there are colleagues. And this process was going very well.
But, right.
Well, but also the previous never were fell.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of people rushed to the airport and tried to include themselves, include themselves in the evacuation flights, regardless of their experience with U.S. Army. You know, then unfortunately, some people hung themselves from the airplane,
mm-hmm.
fell down, and were killed.
Yeah.
So this process, I mean, this rush disturbed the evacuation process. So, however, I received an email from Afghan SIP, and they sent me airport visa, and they asked me and directed me to go to the east of the airport. But when I went there was a large number of people, let's say more than 30,000 people were there.
Wow.
They were trying. They were trying to escape. They were trying to enter to the airport and do themselves to the evacuation flights. And on that time, I decided to stay home because it was very dangerous for me. My children were not in that age. I mean, they were too young. I have four children. They were too young. And it was very difficult for me to enter to the airport. These young children.
Right.
Yeah.
And at that point, what was your expectation at that point for how long it was going to take for you to be able to get you and your family safely out?
Actually, it was not clear, honestly. It was not clear. Everyone was optimistic about the situation to be changed soon, but it was not clear. So it took almost 3 months.
Wow.
All the international flights were stalled. So, yeah, it took almost three months, yeah.
That must have been just horrific. I mean, seeing the rush on the airport, knowing that you wanted to get your family out, knowing that you had the documentation necessary, but not being able to get there and not, you know, and just not feeling safe. It sounds really difficult. So you said then when you were in that situation and just waiting, you and your family just kept moving from one place to another?
Yes. There were building houses.
Uh-huh.
Not only because of the oil, but because of some other people, unknown people. They were looking for those people who were working with the U.S. Army who had good salary. So they were looking for those people. I mean, those criminals who escaped from the jail.
So after several months, then you were able to make it to the U.S. Embassy in Abu Dhabi for your interview. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. And so once you had the interview, then you knew when you and your family would be able to leave.
Yes. Yeah. Actually, when the international airline or the domestic airline resumed their flights, I purchased a ticket. You know, the tickets before it was, let's say, $300 for a return ticket to Dubai, then to Kabul. But at that time, it was around $2,000 for one-way trip.
Oof.
Yeah. So it was really difficult time. So I was home late, and I purchased tickets for all my children and my wife. So I moved to Dubai. I stayed there for almost 4 months. Then I requested to transfer my kids from Kabul U.S. embassy, the Bronx embassy in Kabul, to Norway. It took almost 3 months that they transferred my case to Norway. I had a very difficult time. You know, the living costs pretty high in Norway. Staying in a hotel is not a fan.
Right.
Very expensive, especially with a family of 4 or 5. Although we were 6 people. So for 6 people, very expensive to stay in a hotel for 4 months. Yeah. Finally, I decided, after 3 months, I decided to go back to Afghanistan because of the American situation. It was decided to go back to Afghanistan. But for the last time, I sent an email to the U.S. Embassy in Abu Dhabi, and I requested them for the last time. So luckily, they replied to my email. They scheduled the visa interview. So we went there. And first, we completed the immigration medical examination. And then we went to U.S. Embassy in Abu Dhabi. I can be to the interview day.
And can you tell us how it felt when you finally obtained your SIB status?
Yeah, we were very happy, especially my children.
Yes.
Especially my children, we were very, very happy. Because before that, I told them, I asked them to be really well-being back to Afghanistan because I don't have money. I don't have money for our living costs, for the hotel costs. So we asked to back to Afghanistan. They were worried about it. And when they were that our visa interview is scheduled and then the approval, and they were very, very happy.
It's just, it's really remarkable, that whole process of having to figure out things sort of one step at a time. And I can only imagine how stressful that was to do that with 4 young children and a spouse and trying to, figure out how to wrangle all of that. It was really difficult.
That was really stressful.
Yeah. And you said that once you knew that you had the special immigrant visa, you asked to be resettled in Syracuse, New York, because you had a cousin living there?
Yes.
Did you know anything else about Syracuse before you arrived?
No. Actually, when I received my visa with my passport and my address, the holder, did I receive a call from Iowa? And they were asking me about a place where I want to be visited. And I was asking my cousin. I was in touch with my cousin.
Okay.
And they asked me to come here to Syracuse. She was studying at the Onondaga Community College, and my grandcousin were studying at the Syracuse Community Health Center and things like that. They had a business here at the same hall. So they asked me to come live here. And I didn't know anything more about the Syracuse.
Uh-huh.
That what was important for me was to be visited in the U.S.
Do you remember any of your first impressions of Syracuse in the United States?
Yeah. Dubai is a very advanced city.
Yeah.
All aspects. Dubai has a very, very high living standard. So everything is modern and standard. When we enter first we arrived in JFK, and then we transferred to another local airport. Then we reached Syracuse. My children asked me, "Holler, it is the fence. Is this the same?" Mutation.
It's a little underwhelming, huh?
It's really strange.
Quite a shock, yeah.
Yeah.
So you were resettled with support from Interfaith Works of Central New York. Could you tell us a little more about the specific services and direct assistance that Interfaith Works provided to you and your family?
As I mentioned, my cousins are living here, and she was my youth tie. And she informed me that someone from Interfaith Peace Settlement Agency contacted her, and they were asking about everything. They discussed some issues with my youth tie. That when my flight scheduled and I arrived at the Syracuse airport, I was welcomed by my caseworker from Interfaith Works. And she was really professional. She welcomed me with a good way. Then she transferred me to the hotel because the apartment that they rented for us was not really. It was under maintenance. However, it was when the maintenance work was finished, but the paint was wet. So I stayed for a couple of days at the hotel, and they searched me at the hotel, and after a couple of days, they transferred me to the car.
Did the fact that you were from Afghanistan and had an SIV, did that determine in any way the kind of services or support that you were eligible for at that point?
No, actually, the services that the Interfaith provided for me at that time, it was the same for all immigrants. It was the same resettlement process for all.
And out of those, resettlement services that all refugees and SIV holders receive from an organization like Interfaith Works, what was most important or most helpful to you and your family during those first few months in Syracuse?
Yeah, when a member enters to the new country, everything is completely new for Interfaith Works. The resettlement agency, they help me with shelter, with education, with the school enrollment, medical appointments, establishing care, connecting to the benefit system, like food stamp, insurance, rental assistance. These issues were very, very helpful for me. And also with transportation.
Yeah, those are all very integral services to receive if you're going to be able to get on your own two feet. And I'm curious for you. It's a lot to juggle coming to a new country with four children and a spouse and then figuring out your next step. And I'm curious experience was like for you looking for work in an unfamiliar place and figuring out what that next step would look like.
Yeah, it was really difficult because I didn't know how to apply, where should I go. But my kids were there. After going to this period of their services at the Interfaith Works, when they closed my case, they directed me to the employment specialist of Interfaith Works.
Okay.
I had a couple of meetings with these people, and they were really helpful. They helped me with my CV. Then at the meantime, I heard that Interfaith Works announced some job opportunities, and I asked my caseworker if I can apply to this position. She told me, yes, of course, there is open for everyone. You can apply and you can follow the process, and after the interview, they will decide. So I applied and I followed the process. After the first and second interview, they announced that I can start my work from this day.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, it was really.
Yeah, can you tell us about your role with Interfaith Works?
Yeah. Initially, I was working as a ASD coordinator, meaning Afghan Supplemental Assistance Coordinator.
Mm-hmm.
It was specifically for Afghans. I was supporting Afghans with their needs, such as medical appointments, insurance, bill payments, and some other issues and peripherals like immigration status change, is transportation.
What do you enjoy about your work?
It was really enjoyable for me because I was working with those people who was, I mean, the same process that I was when I came from Afghanistan. I knew their problems, their difficulties, and they can easily share their problems and their concerns with me because I was in the same level.
In addition to finding employment and finding that stability, were there other things that helped you and your family start to feel settled in your new community?
Actually, my cousin's family, besides the interpreter works and my job in these visuals, my cousin's family, they directly, they helped me a lot, most of the issues, most of the things, because they can't be living here for the last 5 years. So they have enough experience in each field. That was very helpful for me.
So it's interesting because your cousin helped you, and then in your first role with Interfaith Works, you were helping newly arrived Afghans. And you know, so there's this process of people who have been through the process being really helpful to others. Were there people who are not Afghan who made you feel welcome in Syracuse or more generally in the U.S.?
Yes, of course. Afghan government, they have different programs, different budget. So, as I mentioned, my previous job as an ASV coordinator, it was just specifically for the Afghans. But right, I mean, position is for all immigrants. I have some clients from Syria, from Afghanistan, from Yemen, from other countries as well. So the service is the same for everyone. We welcome every and each client and immigrant. But the funding cycle is different. For Afghans and for Ukrainians, we have different budgets than for the other immigrant, we have separate budget.
Right. So there are different funding streams, but most people who arrive as refugees are, regardless of where they have come from, they are offered the same services.
Yes. The service is the same for everyone.
And you're in your current role, did I understand?
Currently, I'm working as an intensive case coordinator. Mostly, I help and I assist those clients. I mean, above their refugees period, with a caseworker. And when the caseworker sees that this client needs extra assistance, extra support, then they refer the client to our program, to the PCICM, which is Prepare Communities Intensive Case Management. And then we have that procedure, pre-enrollment assessment or interview, and we ask that questions from the client. After that pre-enrollment assessment, we see if they are eligible to receive our services or not. Then we inform the client that you are eligible to receive our service, and we start our work with the client.
So the Preferred Communities Intensive Case Management Program, it sounds like it's designed to help people who need longer than 90 days, often for very good reasons.
The client feel much better. Also, the 90 days, if they need extra support, extra assistance, there is protocol, which is called PCICM. So they feel much comfortable.
So now that you work for a resettlement agency, has that changed your perspective on the process of welcome?
Yes, of course. of course, because still today I'm dealing with a new client, so this added up to my experience.
What do you wish more Americans understood about how to make newcomers feel welcome?
I think there should be no discrimination that they are newcomers, that they are new immigrants. We are, for example, here for the last 20 years. You are newcomer. And I think it's the responsibility if you want to help the newcomers, new peoples, because they left everything that they have in their own country. Everything is new for them. They don't know the rules, the law, the culture, even the language of the country. So they should help them. They should help. They should give them help, give them help, and they should direct them. That would be much helpful for the newcomers.
And in your own experience and in working with clients, what have you seen? What can Americans do that actually helps newcomers integrate, not just live on their own, but integrate into a new community?
Yeah, actually, I see some volunteers, Americans, and with their families, with the newcomers. They are going to the newcomers' home. They are talking. They are talking with them, and they are improving their knowledge about the culture, about the communities, and some other issues, which is very helpful.
So what have you learned about that process of adapting to working and living in a new society and culture?
Live and to work in a society that you don't have any idea about that, that you don't have any work background, that you don't know about it. Anything about the culture, about the societies, about the old schools, it's a little difficult, but we should search, we should Google, we should ask our friends, our relatives, friends, and some other people to give us information. And that's what I did. I asked from the people, from friends, I searched Google. I made a lot of American friends, so they helped me, they directed me about the rules, about the cultures, and some other issues.
Yeah, so it sounds like you have been very proactive in looking for information, paying attention, trying to figure things out. Can you tell us more about where and how you made friends with Americans?
Yes. When I was, my 90 days period at Interfaith Works, I was supporting through the agency. I mean, rental, and also I was receiving food stamp and credit assistance and everything. So I was not responsible to making money. I had AFI for searching, for talking with people who were around, were in my neighborhood, who my cousin's friends were American. Also, another person who was the CEO of a company, it's CEO of a company, and I was introduced through the Interfaith Works employment specialist, and he was very, very helpful guy, and he helped me a lot with this information.
Found to be the most helpful for your children feeling settled and integrated in their community. Has there been anything in particular that you think has been most helpful?
Can you explain a little more?
Yeah, absolutely. I just think about how resilient and adaptable children have to be, and especially in situations where they have to, are forced to go to a whole new land and make a whole new life and go to a new school and make new friends. And I'm just wondering if you found that there's anything within the community that's been really helpful to make your children feel welcomed and a part of the community. I know sometimes it's sports or it's a local community organization or, a special group. And so I just wondered if that had been your experience.
Actually, I didn't have any experience about that, but when my children started going to the school had a special program for them, orientation program and some other programs. And they made a lot of friends. Initially, they were not happy to go to the school.
Right.
Yeah, you know, everything was new for them. And they had the language barriers. They didn't know English. So after a couple of months, and they were happy, they were going to the school without any force. And the school was providing them some exercises, some entertainments, some programs with families, with other students. So, yeah, it felt a lot to the same.
Oh, that's wonderful.
It sounds like they got over their disappointment after coming from Dubai to Syracuse.
Yes, yes. Actually, they liked the high building of Dubai. But when they entered the Syracuse, they said, oh, there is no building, no high building. After a couple of months, I took them to the New York City.
And,
I took them to the Times Square.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh, I bet they love that.
Yeah, yeah. This is the real America.
Yes. Because the podcast is called Hometown, we like to close each episode by asking our guest what home means to them. So can you tell our listeners what home means to you?
Anywhere where you live, you work, you study, you make money, that's home. So it's totally depends on us how to choose it, how to make it.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for today's episode. For more resources and opportunities to get involved with Episcopal Migration Ministries, be sure to visit EpiscopalMigrationMinistries.org. You may also find us on Facebook and Instagram, where we are EMM Refugees. To stay up to date on all new episodes, make sure to follow us wherever you get your podcasts.
This critical work in ministry would not be possible without listeners and supporters like you. To continue to support the Ministry of Welcome, you can make a gift to Episcopal Migration Ministries. With your help, we will continue to welcome and resettle refugees and communities across the country, offer support to asylum seekers, and create beloved community for all of our immigrant siblings. Visit EpiscopalMigrationMinistries.org/give or text Hometown to 91999.
Our theme song composer is Abraham Mwinda Ikando. Find his music at abrahammwinda.bandcamp.com.
Until next time, peace be with you and with all those you consider home.
You're invited to join thousands of Episcopalians, neighbors, and friends this summer at the Love Always Revival at the KFC Yum Center in Louisville, Kentucky. On Saturday, June 22nd, get immersed in inspiring worship and community, deepen your love for God, kick off the 81st General Convention, and extend a warm welcome to folks discovering the Episcopal Church. The revival is free to attend, so bring your friends. If you're from a neighboring diocese, check in with your diocesan revival champion to find out about group travel options. You can find more information along with registration at iam.ec/lovealways.